Sam, who else was in this? Were you in this, Ken?
No, Ken, I don't think Ken was.
Ken wasn't in this. Sam Parrish was in it. Twilight was in it. B. Seth Brown was in it for a little while, as was our good friend Sean. Roxandra was in it. There were just some old sketches here, but we promise you that in just 2 months' time, we're going to be back with a full, all-new episode of Puppet Radio Theater here on KBOO.
That's right.
And I think that before we start, before Rolf takes over, I think that Ken has something to plug here. So thank you for listening.
I want you all to tune in next week, Monday at 11 p.m. We have a show preempting the regular scheduled program, Subhuman Intellect Theater. It's called the Holy Crowley Hour.
The Holy Crowley
Holy
Hour.
Holy Crowley Hour. Actually, the DJ is a cultist of the Holy Crowley cult.
As and, are we all here at KBOO.
Their only commandment is do what thou wilt, and I think the DJ is going to be doing exactly that 11 o'clock next Monday.
Now, that differs slightly from the Ginger Baker cult, whose rule is do what you like. Do what you like. Thank you very much for tuning in. This has been Puppet Radio Theater on KBOO FM Radio.
This is
KBOO Portland.
You are tuned to the Oval Hour
Radio Theater!
For more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast, welcome you to the Texaco Star Theater.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the 1930s radio play, The Brothers Karamazov. Act 1, how Milton's father came to America and acquired the family name.
True story. My father, who was at that time Solomon Yanovsky, arrived in this country in April 1901. Though you'd think fleeing the oppressive conditions of Tsarist Russia, he felt blessed to be here. You'd never know it to hear him tell the story. Did he run off the boat and kiss the dirt? Did he dance and sing with joy? Stand in awe before the flag? Get down on his knees and give thanks? Prostrate himself to God, President McKinley, and his Uncle Willie, who had a friend with an extra bed in the city? This was America we're talking about, land of opportunity, where a poor, oppressed immigrant can live a life of pride and dignity and make a few bucks in the process. The New World.
I remember I had an erection.
An erection?
I'm on the boat 18 days. Sick as a dog. Nothing to eat but rotten meat. Nothing to drink but water. So stinking dirty. You had to make it into tea to get it down. Now the bed's hard. The boat's crowded. Everyone smells like pigs. Some poor soul shouts out,
America, can you believe it? My God, look.
Like she was gonna shit her pants. She's so excited. I go on deck to see for myself, and right in front of me, in the middle of the ocean, it's this very large woman in a sheet.
The Statue of Liberty.
A statue, maybe. But after 3 weeks at sea, you're not so choosy.
Your first glimpse of this country, and you get an erection.
My one-gun salute.
Well, that's something at least. Ardor, passion, your heart beats faster, your blood courses through your veins like...
I was 20 years old. It was no big deal.
You may be thinking that the Statue of Liberty has inspired many deep emotions through the years. As an engineering marvel, an aesthetic triumph, a symbol of better days to come. But lust? Though beautiful without a doubt as a work of art, considered purely as a woman, and let's be charitable here, she's no Venus de Milo.
For me, ugly women have not existed.
Not ugly, maternal. The sculptor used his mother as a model, and this is a French sculptor with no shortage of pretty jeunes filles to choose from.
Ooh la la.
Dad, if the guy who did the Statue of Liberty wanted to make her a beautiful, seductive goddess, he could have put an ad in Le Monde. But that wasn't the artistic principle here. He used his own mother. You know what's under the folds of her robe? Sagging breasts, stretch marks, varicose veins. This is no sex kitten.
Oh, you have something against mothers? I slept with yours, didn't I?
You see, the Statue of Liberty, you get an erection. How long did it last?
About as long as it took to dock.
After 3 weeks in steerage, my father lands at Ellis Island, the gateway to America.
At that time, we called it the Island of Fears.
The complex had been opened only 8 years previous, replacing Castle Garden, where Samuel Morse demonstrated the telegraph as the processing center for immigration. The administration building, a hodgepodge of architectural style, featured a central structure of four domed turrets, flanking a large peaked roof and, on either side, matching rectangular blocks of basilic complexion. Interesting concept. A Byzantine cathedral sandwiched between two high schools. For good measure, the builders threw in an impressive array of arches, vaults, parapets, gables, ziggurats, flying buttresses, and atop each tower, long metal rods that resemble nothing less than radio antennae. An ornate yet solid edifice of brick and iron, limestone and granite, rising just footsteps away from the waters of New York Harbor.
It would have made a nice summer palace for the Tsar.
Inside, it's Grand Central Station, only bigger and busier, with three great incandescent globes suspended from the ceiling of the main hall, and sunlight filtering through the windows like Chartres without the stained glass. My father's led through a maze of men, women, and children. The tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
I'm gonna throw up.
Stage one, the physical examination. Doctors in blue checked every visible body part and guessed at the ones that weren't. America wanted healthy citizens. Any defect, rickets, lice, trachoma, consumption, meant further examination and treatment and possibly a return ticket home. For many of the refugees, deportation was a death sentence, and rather than submit, they jumped in the chilly harbor, paddling wildly toward the closest stretch of land, the Jersey Shore.
Now that's desperate.
Those who got past the doctors went on to stage two, the immigration inspector.
I was still Zolganovsky at that point.
The inspectors asked each immigrant his name and destination.
Nathan Birnbaum, New York.
Albert Schoenberg, Brooklyn.
Julius Leonard and Adolf Marx.
Max and Pauline Joachim. Ritz, rye. Some kind of cracker.
Bartolomeo Durante, Little Italy.
Asa Yeltsin,
Isidore Itzkowitz, Poughkeepsie.
Some names were too difficult to spell or even understand. The inspector might shorten the name, suggest an Americanized version, or simply provide one easy to remember, such as Johnson, Smith, Brown, or Jones. Many of the immigrants accepted their new names with pride.
Now this immigrant was next in line after hours on my feet, waiting, trembling from hunger, from the fear they'd send me back to Russia. I tried thinking of that statue in the middle of the ocean, so big you could just crawl between her legs and live there. I closed my eyes, and I was inside of her. I could smell her smell. I could feel the warmth and the wetness. This is my new home, I'm thinking. Screw Russia! Screw America! I want to stay here, inside. Then I hear the sudden... like the sound of a Cossack's pistol, and I jump like something wakes you from a light sleep. Even in this crowd, and many of us haven't bathed for several weeks, the odor is unmistakable. The inspector scrunches his nose, he snorts once or twice, and one eye open, the other one nearly shut, he glares right at me. Shifting his eyes to the family behind me, he slowly works his way down the line until he's taken in the first 5 or 10 people. Now no one moves, no one speaks. Babies who've been wailing since we stepped off the boat, they lie wide-eyed and quiet in their mother's arms. Who knows the rules here in America? Maybe they send you back for a little gas.
Okay, who farted?
The inspector asks. But then again, this time in German.
Ach, wer hat gefurzt?
An old man behind me, plump red cheeks, big gray mustache, motions the inspector toward him. I noticed this one earlier, thinking to myself how well-fed he looked and healthy, and wondering if he came over in the same boat, though no doubt in a higher class of accommodations. It figures, a gust like that takes a full stomach. The old man whispers something to the inspector, a heartfelt apology, I'm guessing. Maybe something like this.
Had too much to eat, officer. And I'm very tired. It's been a long trip. It won't happen again, I can promise you that.
And the inspector nods his head, smiles. He pats him on the back. Are they friends for life? Next thing I know, the inspector grabs me by the arm and pulls me to the front of the line.
Name and destination,
he says, pen in hand. All business again. Solomon Yanofsky, New York, I answer. I had been rehearsing this line for the past hour.
Solomon what?
He says. Yanofsky, officer.
I don't know if I can pronounce that, Solomon. And I certainly have no idea how to spell it.
He was going a little too fast for my English. I was picking up what he was saying about 10 seconds after he'd said it, which put me at an extreme disadvantage.
But don't worry about it. Just leave it to me. I'm going to give you a real American name, Solomon. A name that people, real American people, will remember.
The inspector wrote a few things down on a green sheet of paper, stamped it, and handed the form to me with a smile so wide I could see the rotting teeth through the red hairs of his mustache.
Welcome to our country,
he said. And that's how I got the name Fart.
With his new name, my father, Saul Fart, completes the inspection. The authorities consider him fit enough physically and mentally to prosper and multiply in America. An officer points him toward the green doors at the end of the main hall to the ferries waiting to take him to Manhattan. As he prepares to embark upon his new life, he reads the words on the door, words of comfort to every immigrant. Push to New York.
They stand at the threshold, dog-tired, dirty, and full of hope. The old country just a fading memory. This is their home now. Beyond the green door.
Push to New York.
The door says, to the harbor, the ferries, the bridges and wharves, the skyline of Manhattan, the belching smokestacks and steamships. The door says,
push to New York.
To the flop houses and penthouses, the back alleys and main avenues, the push carts and salons, the fish markets and stock market.
Push to New York.
To the New York of the Algonquins, the Iroquois, the Dutch, English, Irish, Germans, Italians, Russians, Greeks, Slavs, and Chinese.
The New York of the Puritans, Catholics, Hindus, Jews, Baptists, Buddhists, and Seventh-day Adventists.
The New York of Irving, Melville, Poe, and James.
Jay Gould, J.P. Morgan, and Diamond Jim Brady.
Peter Stuyvesant, Teddy Roosevelt.
That's President Roosevelt to you, young fellow.
And Boss Tweed.
Pulitzer, Ziegfeld, Edison, and Nikola Tesla.
Push to New York.
To the city that never sleeps.
And it follows the city that never wakes up.
The city dense with crowds and corporations bursting at the seams, stretching to the heavens.
The city where there's always room for more. For you, your children's friends.
And that gentleman over there with his hand in your pocket.
Oops. Just listen to the door.
And the door says,
push to New York.
Only there's something this big mouth door doesn't tell you.
What's that?
New York, and the rest of the country, for all I know, pushes back.
Do your song, Dad.
Living in the shtetl can really test your mettle. It's hard to keep your spirits up when you're eating off the hoof. You ask for just a chance, you get a song and dance. People, let me tell you, it's no fiddler on the roof.
People, let me tell you, it's no fiddler on the roof.
In the home of Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, and Lobachevsky, we had no trouble catching on. To literature and logic, you see la vie quotidienne could seem so non-Euclidean, and the daily dose of suffering proved very pedagogic. A college education in my former nation was no escape from joblessness.
for those among the chosen. So, without the least confusion, I came to the conclusion to leave my mother Russia before the Tsar could close in.
Without the least confusion, he came to the conclusion to leave his mother Russia before the Tsar could close in.
Shopping for a place that would accept my race, I picked the land of liberty of Washington and Jackson.
The streets are paved with gold, they say. The riches are untold, they say.
And now that I've been here a while and had a chance to think a while, I think they got the facts wrong.
And now that he's been here a while and had a chance to think a while,
I think therefore I is a vile. He thinks they got the facts wrong.
Karamazov Air was written and produced for radio by Ken Jones and features Lynn, Koch, Rob, Larry, Olivia, and an all-singing, all-dancing Ralph Semperbon. We now return you to your current era.
Change
that dial because
you are tuned to the
Ubu Hour Radio
Theater Show
on KBOO.
Did you really think they were going to pay you? You're lucky we got here first.
Begin? Perhaps at a small gathering in someone's living room or with some friends at a restaurant. People laugh and converse and you join in. You talk about the latest movies, the weather. Maybe some politics, climate change, the situation in the Middle East, Eastern Europe, Africa.
Matter who's in office. Democrats, Republicans. Obama wasn't all that good either. Better than the idiot before him, though. And now we get another one. Is she any better?
At least it's better than the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld regime. They were horrible.
But still, Obama or Hillary, they're just another corporate shill, the softer side of the capitalist imperium.
Just think, in 2 years it'll be 2020. Maybe people will finally see what's going on. Maybe we'll finally get a president who will take on the one percenters.
Don't hold your breath.
Everyone in your circle mostly agrees on politics. It begins with people talking.
That's how many things begin. Human communication is an essential element of who we are. Though sometimes you wonder if everyone is just spouting what they heard on Amy Goodman or John Stewart, or read on one of those many blogs where you and your friends get your news.
The whole system has to change. People need to be more aware of what's going on around them.
That's right. People need to know the truth. Manning and Snowden were the tip of the iceberg. The truth needs to be revealed, or we'll never move forward.
At this moment, a trickle of dread tingles at the back of your thoughts as the conversation volleys back and forth. You reach for your drink. You sense that a certain subject is about to come up, a subject that lingers in the shadows of your memory, in the dark place where things have not been dealt with. There's always that chance that someone will bring it up.
We need to know why those 3,000 people died. That was when it all went downhill. We need to know who killed them.
We know who killed them.
No, we don't. We don't know the truth. We don't know anything. They have covered it all up.
What's important is how the administration at the time used the situation to justify the means of what they did. Torture, military occupation, lies, the war on terrorism, homeland security, wiretapping. It doesn't end.
Where does it all begin? Early in the 21st century? A century defined by an event in the first year that will mark the rest of that penultimate century of the so-called civilized world. A horrific event to usher in an even more horrific events to follow in an escalating spiral of global madness and dwindling resources and mass die-offs.
Heard that a plane crashed into World Trade Center 1, 4, 5, and World Trade Center 2.
The world ended that day. The towers fell. I saw it happen. I was there on the street. I ran out of a coffee shop at the sound of commotion, and I saw the World Trade Center tower collapse. I was three blocks away. I felt like it wasn't real, like I was in a movie. It simply collapsed.
Where does it begin? September 11, 2001. The infancy of a new century. A century of chaos and destruction, eradication and misery on a scale of unprecedented even compared to the horrors of the previous century. A mass psychosis of madness in the downward spiral to the end. But that is all in the future.
I saw chaos all around me. I saw the tower fall. I walked away. I couldn't take it anymore. My whole life was a lie. The financial world, where I worked, built on lies and more lies. I walked away from all that. I vanished in the confusion. I moved to the West Coast, vanished in the streets of San Francisco, and then eventually moved north to Portland.
Does it begin? 2001. Or maybe we'll flash forward to 2018, a hot summer evening.
I tell you, we need to know the truth about 9/11. That's when everything went wrong.
And a woman suddenly walks away from a gathering of people. And a friend chases after her, alarmed.
Bree, is something wrong?
I have to leave. I can't listen to that.
Come on, Bree. They just talk shit. Come back. You can't let them bother you. You don't want them to think.
Don't want them to think what?
It's just you get all upset when certain things get mentioned.
Just that one thing.
Where does this begin? Conversations you don't want to hear. Memories. One of the 3,000 people. Someone talks about something that happened many years earlier, and then you are back to that day. In a classroom, and the teacher is solemn, and a television has been turned on because a national tragedy has just taken place.
When I watched it happen that day on the TV, did I know what had happened? Did I know he was in those buildings? Or was that later? I can't remember.
Oh, that's not important. That is all in the past. What is important is how you deal with it now.
My mother, she couldn't deal with it. She went crazy with grief. She was never the same after that. She lost her mind. She stopped making sense.
Now, different people have different ways of dealing with trauma. One has to accept this. Now, tell me about your mother.
She's in a place back east, a ward of the state. She's...
You don't like to talk about her?
No, it's just... After he was gone, she couldn't handle it. Drake and I, we had to...
Drake? Your brother?
Yes. It was like we had to take care of her. I was only 13 years old, and Drake was even younger. But we had to act like parents, because she lost it.
How many people died that day? Was it 3,000 or 5,000? And none of them mattered except for one. She has photographs of the photographs and the note that she, her mother, and her brother hung up on the fence. She had her life shattered by an event she still could not comprehend, even now, 17 years later.
How close were you to your father before he passed away?
He was... I missed him. I still miss him.
Oh, it was a terrible thing that happened.
And then... The other day, I thought I saw him. I was driving home from work, and I'm at a light, and I glance over at a bunch of protesters on the corner, and this man looks at me. He was standing there with a sign, and I thought it was him.
Your father?
Yes. Then the light changed. I pulled over, but I couldn't see him. He was no longer there.
And he looked like your father?
Yes. You must think that's crazy, Dr. Lehrer.
No, not at all. That's perfectly normal. Even after many years, transference of a loved one? Well, memories do not remain fixed over time. The memory of your father, the resemblance of your father to this man, is merely your mind's attempt to compensate for the loss that you've never finalized.
So I just hallucinated that my father was there?
Well, no, you are still surviving your father's death. You feel guilty about it because you were too young to absorb the full consequences.
Guilty?
Oh, as the eldest child. And you feel angry that he's gone. You have this internal anger at your father.
But he's... How can I be angry at him?
Well, anger at him and at the larger forces and anger at yourself. You feel rejection. And that's why you seek out relationships that are doomed. To avoid getting too serious, to avoid another strong rejection.
Yes. But why do I think that I saw him?
Unresolved issues? The way he died, his complete obliteration from this physical earth, oh. And all the other events afterwards, your trauma sinks to the mass trauma of contemporary society.
That's the thing.
It could be him, I'm about to say, but that would be crazy. Instead, I say to the doctor...
I can still hear his voice when I close my eyes, reading me a story.
The time is up. This has been a very enlightening session. I do think I have just the tape for you.
The doctor reaches into his desk and hands you an audio CD, one of his hypnotherapeutic recordings. He hands them out like prescriptions, these audio recordings that contain trance-inducing music and subliminal messaging, which were meant to help cure the suffering individual.
He's wrong. It's just a trick of the mind. You see something and think it's something else. The shrink's just stealing your money, Bree. And this stupid CD he gave you, that's supposed to help.
It's hypnosis therapy. He gave me one so that I'd stop seeing Dad. And another to help with relationships. So I can get in a good relationship.
And these things are supposed to work? Yeah, right. Bree, how can you believe this bullshit?
It doesn't hurt to try something new.
Let me see that one.
Drake, give it back to me.
So this CD will help me get a girl?
I don't know. He gave it to me, Drake. You shouldn't mess around with this stuff.
I need more help in relationships than you do. You always get a new boyfriend, even if most of them are jerks or losers. Let me give it a try. If it works for me, I'll give it back to you in a few days.
Where do we begin? We can go back 17 years ago when the planes hit the towers. Or maybe we can go back another 13 years to when you were born. Or 13 years before that, your father was a hippie at Columbia and your mother was still in high school. The beginning is arbitrary, really, chosen by the narrator to slant the events at will.
I'll tell you when it all began. 9/11. The world changed that day. It changed for all
Bree,
of us.
Where's
That's
Bree
what
going?
I'm saying. It changed everything, and we are still recoiling. Nothing's been the same since it happened.
Bree, what's wrong? Come back to the table.
I don't know. I didn't want to hear that stuff.
Just ignore it. Come back here.
They started talking about it, and then they can't stop. I can hear them from here. I don't want to hear about it.
Come on. You can't be so offended whenever someone mentions 9/11. That's being immature. You need to get over it.
Easy for you to say. You didn't lose your dad that day.
No, but bad things happen to people all the time. Hey, come back here, Bree.
No, I need to go home.
Damn it, Bree. Come back here. What will I tell the others? Who are you calling?
Drake?
Big sister!
Is Bree okay?
She feels sick. She wanted to get some rest.
There's all these theories about what happened. The administration let it happen, or they were in on it. The false flag operation of all false flag operations.
It makes perfect sense. A major piece for the project of the new American century, an attack on American soil. The carving up of Iraq months earlier in Cheney's secret energy summit, that's what they're covering up.
The cover-up alone is the proof.
The cover-up doesn't prove anything. Even if it was all a big fuck-up that they never intended to happen, they'd still cover it up to hide their complete incompetence.
9/11 is the linchpin. We find the truth of 9/11 and everything will fall into place. The truth of 9/11 will bust open the system so that the change becomes possible. 9/11 has its grubby fingerprints and all these other problems. Exposing 9/11 is the key to changing the system that is rotten to the core.
Get out and look around.
Look around? What are we looking for?
The man you saw.
Why would we want to do that, Jake? We should just let it go.
Let it go? By sweeping it under the carpet? Who are you calling?
I need to ask Dr. Lair.
Ask him what?
If this is okay. Hello, I need to talk to Dr. Lair.
This is Dr. Lair. Bree, I've been expecting your call. Did you listen to the two tapes I gave you?
Leave some stupid message on his machine.
Dr. Lair?
I can tell you a thing or two about that bullshit doctor.
You're there.
Bree, you sound distraught. Are you with your brother?
Yes.
Well, don't let him talk you into anything rash, Bree. You know you can't trust him. Are you at home?
No.
Where are you?
Who are you talking to, Bree?
We're at the corner of Main and Park, downtown, a block from Park Occupy.
Are you in a car?
Yes.
Well, stay in the car. If Drake wants to leave, but you stay. Stay in the car. Now, do you understand me, Bree?
Yes.
Come on. We need to get out there and find the bastard. Pocket the phone, Bree. You're wasting your time on those automated voice menus.
Listen, Bree. Stay there. I will be there soon to help you. And remember, Drake is not very well mentally. Love him, but don't trust anything he says. Now, he is not to be trusted.
Give that to me.
Give it back, Drake. What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this?
You grab the cell from him and clutch it to your ear.
Dr. Lair?
Nothing but dial tone. And then he has his hands on your wrist. He pulls you to him, past the steering wheel, and he slides out of the front passenger door. He pulls you out and after him and onto your feet.
We need to find that man. I want you to see that it's all in your head. He is not Dad. He's a nobody. Let's go.
And then he pulls you behind him as you head towards the park.
We don't have to do this.
Dr. Lair and his stupid tapes are worthless. We need to go to the source of the problem.
The source of the problem? What do you mean?
The man you saw. You need to talk to him. See him up close. Ask him questions. Then you'll know he's not Dad.
That's crazy, Drake. What makes you think we'll see him again?
You saw him here twice before. He's got to be around somewhere. There's always protesters around this park.
I think we should talk to Dr. Lair first. Before we do any of this, I think we should...
What is it? Talk to me, Bree.
Nothing.
You see him, don't you?
I think so.
Where?
Over there, by that lamppost.
Oh, that guy. You gotta be kidding me. So let's go over and talk to him.
No.
Why not? What are you afraid of?
Nothing.
Then let's go over and talk to him. Clear it all up. We'll ask him some questions. Then you'll know for sure he's just a stranger. He looks nothing like Dad.
We can't just walk up to him and...
Why not?
We should go back to the car.
No, you need to confront him. Otherwise, you'll never be sure of the truth.
It's not him. I was mistaken.
You're lying, Bree.
I don't think that's him. Let's go home, Drake.
Not until we talk to him. Come on, sister.
Let go of me.
Not until we do this.
Hold on a moment, myself.
Who is it? Don't answer it. Let it go to voicemail.
Just step back, Drake. Maybe I should take this.
No.
Give that.
The doctor. You can call him back later. Let's go meet the man.
It's not him, Drake.
Damn, he spotted us.
He's walking away. We should go back to the car, Drake.
Why is he walking away? Because he saw us?
What are you doing?
Come on. We can't let him get away. This way, Bree.
Text to begin. Bree, I have just arrived at the park. Please answer your phone and let me know where you are. I am very concerned about your welfare, and I want to make sure you are safe. Dr. Lair, text end.
I want to go back to the car, Drake.
No, we're in this together.
He went down that alley. Come on, Bree. Don't slow me down.
I need to call Dr. Lair.
We need to pick up the pace is what we need to do. You can call him later. There he is. Over there. Across the street. Down that corner. Come on. This way.
Hit redial. Huh? Drake, slow down. My legs are not as long as yours.
Yes, the tape seems to be working. Now, let me come help you, Bree. Where are you? Bree, can you hear me? Are you alone now, Bree?
No, my brother. We're corner of 9th and...
Your brother? Don't let him get you into any... Where are you, Bree? Bree, you poor girl. You need to get away from him. You need to tell me where you are.
You shouldn't talk to him. I need to tell you things about the doctor, Bree. He can't be trusted. Come on, over there. He's over there. Under that overpass. Oh, we've got him cornered. He's somewhere over there, in the shadows.
What do you want from me?
Hello, sir. Can you come out of there?
Why do you keep following me, huh? You can't just leave me alone. Who are you? NSA, CIA, or do you work for some private security firm, some private military firm, sucking us deeper into the black hole of a corporate police state? Who are you? What do you want from me?
We're not anything. My sister needs to talk to you. Come out here and talk to us.
I don't want to talk to you. You have no right to ask me to talk to you. There's the freedom to speak, and more important, the freedom not to speak.
It's nothing like that. My sister doesn't work for any spook organization. She has this funny idea. I want to help her put something to rest. To do that, she needs to talk to you. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Not like anywhere else to go.
You heard what I said.
What of it?
Can you talk to her? Help her out.
How can I help? I don't even know who you people are. I don't know what you want.
Let's just go back to the car, Drake. We shouldn't bother this man.
What do you mean? Back to the car? Now that we have him cornered? That's stupid, Bree.
He sounds nothing like Dad.
I think we should talk to him. We'll never get this chance again. Hey, you!
Yeah, still here. Not like I can walk through walls.
What's your name?
Why are you asking me questions? Why should I answer them?
We just want to make sure you're not our father.
Well, now you know. I'm not your father. Unless there's something I don't know that happened with some girlfriend a long time ago.
Walk through walls?
Let's go, Drake. This has gone on long enough. Sir, sorry to bother you.
How do we know it's not Dad?
Because he's dead, Drake. Our dad is gone.
Maybe. But what if he didn't die that day? What if he got amnesia or something? In all the confusion, maybe he doesn't even know.
That's crazy, Drake.
I'm not so sure. His voice. That thing about walking through walls. I remember Dad saying that.
That's crazy, Drake. You know it's not Dad.
How do we know for sure? You stay here. I'm going in. And don't talk to that damn doctor.
No, Drake. What if he's armed?
You can't stop me, Bree.
Be careful, Drake.
What are you afraid of?
What do you want from me?
I want the truth.
Bree, are you okay?
Dr. Lair, is that you?
I'm glad I located you. Now, where's your brother?
He went in there to talk to the man.
What man? Never mind that. At least you're safe, Bree. You need to come with me.
Let me go get Drake.
No. Archaeopteryx.
Huh? Why are you...
Lethotrity. Scotophobin. Now, will you come with me?
No. Why are you... Doctor, let go of me.
No, you need to come with me.
Get your hands off me. Why are you acting like this?
Archaeopteryx. Lithotrity. Scotophobin. Now let me help you. Come here and let me comfort you.
Doctor, get your hands away. Were you trying to...
No, nothing of the sort, Bree. I was trying to calm you down. It's okay. I'm a doctor. And you shouldn't get any funny ideas. Did you listen to the hypnosis tapes I gave you?
Yes, just the one.
Oh, the one on relationships?
No, I gave that one to Drake.
What? How damn you, Bree. I told you to never give my audio recordings out to other people. Those tapes are formulated for particular situations. And there's no telling how an unstable mind like Drake's will react.
Tell me who you are!
He took it from me.
Maybe that's why he's acting all crazy, dragging you here. We must leave immediately, Bree. Our lives are in danger. Drake is unstable, and we know nothing about this other man.
I don't believe it! Bree! Bree!
Drake, are you okay?
Don't speak to him. This way, Drake.
Drake, what is it? Drake.
Forgive me, Bree. Come here, please.
Was that... Dad? Dad? Drake? Let go of me, Doctor. I need to... It's my dad.
Your father? Of course it's not your father, Bree. Ignore that a homeless confidence man has conned your brother of that. We have to leave now.
Let go of me. You're hurting me.
Stop struggling or you'll hurt yourself. Calm down, Bree. I want to help you. I want to keep you safe. Let me help you relax. I am a licensed massage therapist.
Get your hands off of me. No.
You need serious help, Bree. You need to come with me.
Bree! Where are you?
Bree! It's me. I'm your father.
No, let go of me. Let me talk to that man. Ow!
Get off the ground, Bree. You can't go back there.
Then, as he grips your arm and pulls you beside him towards his SUV, he thinks to himself...
Why didn't you just listen to the tape? You wouldn't be acting this way. You would have melted in my arms. Who knows how far we could have gone?
Indeed, how far. Hypnosis-inducing audio CDs that the doctor made himself to help cure his patients with subliminal messaging beneath the relaxing sounds. But sometimes the doctor used the tapes for other, more nefarious purposes, particularly when he found one of his patients attractive.
Sleep until I say the three words. And when I say the three words, you will desire me, Bree. You will feel an intense sexual desire for me, Bree. Every fiber in your body will yearn for the touch of my hands. You will want me inside you, Bree. Desire, Bree. Desire. A relentless, uncontrollable desire that can only be quenched by the one who speaks the three words.
Archaeopteryx, Lithotrity, Scotophobin. Three words that have nothing to do with this story, except that when whispered in the victim's ear sets in motion a previously placed hypnotic suggestion from the subliminal voice on an audio CD. As Drake discovered many hours earlier, when he awoke from the couch thinking about his sister and his sister's doctor while rubbing one off.
We need to find her! Bree!
Maybe we should give it time to sink in, Drake. If she doesn't want to see me yet.
She does want to see you. I'm telling you, her doctor pulled her away. And that guy's a whack job and a half.
He gave her this audio recording where he's telling her all the ways he wants to do sexual acts on her. But it's all real low so that she won't hear it.
Subliminal messaging. That's crazy. How do you know this?
Because I listened to it. I couldn't hear what the voice was saying until I cranked it up and filtered the other sounds out with my mixer to isolate the voice.
Are you sure? That seems... This doctor is obviously quite disturbed.
That's what I'm telling you. And he has Bree. Over there. I told you. The doctor has her. He's pulling her away.
You can't manhandle her like that. Hey, you! Stop that!
Unhand my sister, you villain!
You are getting in the van, Bree, right now. Doctor's orders.
No, let go of me.
I'm doing this for your own good, Bree, so that you don't hurt yourself. Now, don't make me hurt you.
Let go of my daughter!
Dad?
She is not your daughter. You're a fraud. And Drake is an idiot for believing anything you say.
No, I think...
You are crazy! Your father died 17 years ago. Get in the van, Bree. Now, let's get away from these morons, these...
No! Get off me!
The doctor's the fraud! Him and his hypnosis CDs!
Listen to me, Bree. Do not listen to these people. They do not have your best interest at heart.
And you do?
You just want to get into her pants with your stupid...
I will sue you for slander, young man. I will have you put away in a mental institution for a very long time. I will have you both arrested for tormenting this poor girl with lies.
Dad, why? Why?
Come back here, Bree. Doctor's orders. Now, come back.
I didn't die. Stepping out of a coffee shop on my way to work, I saw the skyscraper fall. I just knew that what I was doing was evil, what we were all doing. World trade, investments, an artificial world that was destroying the real world. And yet, I had been spared. I was alive. If I had arrived to work a minute earlier, I would have been annihilated.
All lies. Now, don't believe a word he says, Bree.
I had to leave it all behind. The work, your mother who was losing her mind. I couldn't deal with any of it anymore. I had to vanish. With all that commotion and complete destruction, how would anyone know whether or not I had survived?
But why didn't you tell us? Why did you leave us?
I didn't want to leave. Your mother and I weren't getting along, but I certainly didn't want to leave you and Drake. There was no other way. I had to leave my life completely behind, forget about it all. Erase the slate and start over again. When would I have an opportunity like this again? I didn't want anyone from my past to know.
Dad.
Come along, Bree. Enough of this bullshit.
Get away from me!
Get the fuck out of here, doctor! Or I'll...
Are you threatening a medical professional? I'm calling the police right now.
Go ahead, asshole. Call them. Just leave us alone. Bree, Drake, we have a lot to catch up on after 17 years.
Oh, fuck it! This is how it's going to end. I should just run you people over. Fucking calm down, Lair. Calm down. You need to go home. What a miserable night. Crazy people and con artists. No fucking justice in this miserable world. No fucking justice at all.
No luck.
Somehow I knew we'd all be together again. I'm really sorry for the last 17 years. I must have been crazy to walk away from you. I just wanted you kids and your mother to be happy. The life insurance, the pension.
That all got wasted on mother's hospital bills.
And that stupid church she started going to. Hey, let's go get something to eat.
I'll treat you both to a nice meal. I know this nice Lebanese restaurant, not far from here.
And the three of them walk slowly away. They are all still slightly stunned by this turn of events, and the man is not sure he will ever be able to be forgiven. And now they walk into a different future. But that is a different story, because we have now reached the end of this radio theater piece. titled The Lost Years, and starring...
Olivia.
Yvonne.
Drake Hotel.
Larry.
Fremily Harris.
Rolf.
Christian Photo Dental.
Victor Rattlehead.
Virginia Fur.
The Lost Years, written and directed by Rolf Semperbon for the Ubu Hour and KBOO Radio.
Take me. Now.
no freebies.
You know the first.
This has been the Ubu Radio Theater Hour.
We won't be back until next month, but have no fear, because there's radio theater every Monday night.
And if you want to listen to this program again or other Ubu Hour shows, you can podcast us on the web.
Go to kboo.fm and look for Ubu, spelled U-B-U.
And we'll see you next month.
The Ubu Hour.
Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha-Cha Club.
Let's put on the show.
Olé, olé, it's show time.
In the tiki, 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 tiki room. In the tiki, 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 tiki room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki, 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 tiki room.
Welcome to our tropical hideaway, you lucky people, you. If we weren't in the show starting right away, we'd think the audience too.
All together in the tiki, 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 tiki room. In the tiki, 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 tiki room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki, 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 tiki room.
The boys in the back are called macaws.
Because of their claws?
No, because they're macaws. And our fine feathered friend is a jolly toucan. And toucan sounds better than one toucan can.
In the tiki, 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 tiki room. In the tiki, 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 tiki room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki, 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 tiki room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki, 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 tiki room. All the birds sing words and the flowers croon. Tiki, 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 tiki room.